Space Oddity.
Hello everybody and welcome to a new episode of Space Oddity. I'm Christopher and today we are going to relive our latest international symposium, Spatial Figures in the Anthropocene. The event took place on the 5th and 6th October 2023 at the IC Berlin, the Institute of Cultural Inquiry on top of the Pfefferberg in Berlin-Prenzlauer Berg. Over 120 researchers and guests gathered from all over the world to discuss globalization, social change and space. To give you an insight into our discussions, we will listen into the introduction lecture given by the two symposium organizers, Ignacio Farias, project leader of Project CO5, Urban Microclimate Planning Regimes, and Sig Stets, project leader of Project BioTour Control Space. After the short opening lecture, we are going to listen brief statements of 4 out of 8 of our symposium speakers before we join Ignacio and Sigge in a private post-symposium discussion. If you're interested in the keynotes or the performance lecture from the symposium, I recommend to check our website.
It is our great pleasure to welcome you all here at the ICI and also to our symposium, Spatial Figures in the Anthropocene. So the CRC is a research consortium based at Technical University of Berlin. It brings together around 50 researchers in 16 different projects from disciplines such as sociology, anthropology, communication studies, visual art, architecture, geography, and planning, with the common aim of exploring, describing, and analyzing the spatial transformations of the present. The overall goal is to formulate a spatial theory of contemporary transformations that avoids some of the shortcomings and pitfalls of globalization theories of recent decades. There are, of course, many different approaches to globalization, but a key feature that they all share is a scalar conception of the social as extending somehow from the local to the global, and of social change as involving processes of rescaling. The CRC proposes to move beyond scales and rescaling and instead to grasp socio-spatial change through figures and refiguration. We are interested in the spatial figures that unfold when humans, but also many other actors and forces, come together in world-making processes and projects. We understand spatial figures as powerful topological forms inherent in empirical arrangements of human and non-human entities. And we study socio-spatial change as involving the complex and often conflictual interplay between different spatial figures. The assumption is that the social does not take place in space, but unfolds as and through spatial arrangements. The consequence is that we need to equip ourselves with new concepts and methods for tracking and analyzing the clashes and shifts of spatial figures that hold things together. A key vector for the refiguration of space is the so-called Anthropocene, a contested concept to which we stick because it functions as a common framework across disciplines to critically engage with the radical transformations in the conditions of livability on Earth due to climate change, but not only, as Marisol de la Cadena would say. This, but not only, refers to the multiple forms of concomitant transformation, depletion, destruction, and extinction that do not follow directly from global warming, but are intertwined with it. The challenge that the Anthropocene poses to our understanding of space might not be obvious, as public conversations and scientific debates have mostly been about its temporal emergence. That is, when would this scene, this new geological epoch, begin? Debates that have become entangled with conversations about the social and political histories of climate change, ecological destruction, and environmental injustice. The move from a focus on the Great Acceleration, which basically documents this worrying increase in Earth system changes from the mid-20th century onwards, to notions such as Capitalocene or Plantationocene, which point to a longer genealogy of these catastrophes, has been important in refining the kinds of human agency that the prefix anthropos points to in the word Anthropocene. and also in questioning the supposed universality and vague collective responsibility that the figure of Anthropos might suggest. Furthermore, the colonial scholars have suggested that, quote, a billion black Anthropocenes, unquote, have already taken place, as the socio-natural worlds and ecologies of many souths have been ruthlessly destroyed by colonial projects and powers that still shape the present. So, in light of this important debate, the recent decision of the Anthropocene Working Group, which is a body of the Subcommission on Quaternary Stratigraphy, to define the high concentration of plutonium particles found in the soil of Lake Crawford in Ontario, Canada, as the geological marker or golden spike for the Anthropocene, has not been received without criticism. By linking the Anthropocene to atomic energy and the development of nuclear weapons, and establishing 1952 as the geochronological boundary for this new period, it renders invisible the longer history of capitalism and coloniality that is inextricably linked to the current climate emergency. But the Golden Spike might also be a good place to start understanding how the Anthropocene challenges our notions of space. A Golden Spike is a point in the rock, a mark in the sedimentary stratum of a physical site that represents a temporal boundary separating different geological periods in the history of the Earth. But notably, the geological significance of a golden spike is not in the sedimentary mark itself, but in its correlation with some kind of event in Earth history documented in sediments elsewhere. As geologists would say, I quote, correlation precedes definition. Unquote. In the sense that correlation with stratigraphic data from other parts of the world, something that geologists need to test painfully, is more important than the substantive definition of the period itself. So the Golden Spike is more than local, but at the same time, it is less than global, because those correlations are never perfect and globally distributed. This is very interesting because the geological does not appear here as a whole or as a globe, but as a painfully constructed and constantly contested and revised correlation between local sites. So this challenge to scalar definitions of local and global phenomena is an important feature of Anthropocene thinking. Tim Morton's influential conceptualization of climate change as a hyper-object emphasizes that it transcends human scales of time-space experience and action and is characterized by its non-locality. This means that the local manifestations of global warming express it only incompletely or fragmentarily, as in the case of the Golden Spike. People such as Bruno Latour have pointed to the inadequacy of the modern figure of globalization or of the Earth as a globe. The globe, he argues, is based on a cartographic definition of the Earth seen from an external or godlike position, a geometric abstraction, space as res extensa, and not the spaces in which life would unfold. Moreover, Latour argues that the globe created by capitalist globalization cannot be sustained by our planet. We would need at least 1.75 Earths to sustain our global economy without endangering future generations, according to some calculations. Right? So the globe does not fit in our planet. And at the same time, the globe of capitalist globalization is actually the project of a few, a provincial project imposed on the majority of the world by a few global powers. So the globe is, as Latour would say, and I paraphrase Latour here, too big to fit on the planet and too small to represent us all. So the question is how to conceptualize this world we all inhabit.
I will introduce some analytical concepts now that we developed within the Collaborative Research Center. So over the last 6 years, the CRC has pursued a conceptual program to empirically grasp spatial figures as modes of ordering the very complex spatial mess in which we live. Attuned to the sheer variety of spatial formations and conflicts, we have focused on four spatial figures that, despite taking different empirical forms, recur or reappear in our empirical fields. These are indeed rather familiar spatial figures, and they are widely recognizable as place, territory, route, and network. Our perhaps less familiar approach in understanding these figures is that we understand these as topological figures, each defined by a different logic or mode of spatialization. They are based on the assumption that space is constituted by the way entities, subjects, objects, such as two points in the simplest case, are related to each other. Let us give you a brief introduction to how each of these figures constitute space in a different way. First, spaces can be made through practices of marking and identifying locations. This produces places. Places are characterized by being simultaneously multiple, unique, and distinctive. Settlements from hamlets to megacities are good examples of places because they can grow and shrink without losing their identity and because they are identified by names that provide orientation about where you are. The outside of a place is an unmarked area. An undefined environment. Secondly, spaces can also emerge through practices of delimitation, that is, through the drawing of boundaries through which territories are formed. Territory as a spatial figure is characterized in its simplest and most abstract case by a circle or a square that surrounds or delimits an area. What is marked here are not points or places, but borders that separate an inside from an outside. Thirdly, spaces can be produced through practices of moving and traversing, thus creating routes. Routes are lines. They have start and end points, but these points only give direction to the route. Movement along a line is central, so specific points along a line are only of interest for orientation. Routes turn their backs on places and cross territorial boundaries. Examples of routes are highways or commodity chains. A world formed only by routes would consist of a meshwork of straight and curved lines, to use Tim Ingold's concept. Finally, spaces can be created through connections between nodes or places. This creates networks, which allow for a multiplication of possibilities, detours, and diversions. Networks can take many different forms, but they always consist of connections between nodes. An element or point in space is only integrated into a network if it fulfills a function for that network. The more functions an element performs, the more likely it is to become an important node. In most cases, networks are not hierarchic, but shaped by such asymmetries. A good example of the logic of network is the connections between different global cities that form a network space of finance. A world made up entirely of networks would consist of nodes and links. These four different forms of spatialization are not meant to be exhaustive, although we consider them as key modes of spatialization. We argue that these four figures are empirically and historically extremely powerful modes of constituting space, as they overlap, complement, or conflict in a variety of ways. The power does not lie in their abstract simplicity, but on the contrary, in their concrete entanglement in very specific historical projects of world-making, especially those associated with the colonialization and modernization projects of the West and the Global North, which are strongly intertwined with the history of the Anthropocene.
Since this symposium was arranged and composed around the four identified dominant spatial figures as previously named in the Anthropocene, namely territory space, trajectory space, and network space, each figure was given one panel with two speakers for an input presentation, followed up by a joint discussion afterwards. But anyway, let's start with the first figure, the refiguration of territories, along with Alexandra Arène from Paris, and Gaston Godier from Vancouver was giving a keynote called Place, Territory, Terrain, a Spatial Triad for the Climate Crisis. And Gaston Godier is professor of anthropology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver and a Guggenheim Fellow from Buenos Aires, Argentina. His main research interests are terrain, place, territory and materiality, racialized geographies, insurrections and revolution, agro-ecological and climate activism. So, let's listen to Gaston.
Yeah, I was part of the panel on rethinking the spatial figure of territory in the Anthropocene. So my paper was about putting in conversation these three key spatial figures like place, territory, and terrain. I was inspired by Henri Lefebvre's spatial triad in his book, The Production of Space. He said that space is simultaneously lived, conceived, and perceived. And inspired by that idea, I was thinking how, you know, any space on Earth is a place experienced by people through their experiences, memories, cultural sensibilities. It's also a part of a territory, territory understood as a formation of power, different scales. You know, we have the territories of the states, local territories associated in some cases with indigenous territories. And then the third figure of the terrain, which captures, I think, more the material dimensions of space on the planet, involving both the physicality of the earth, you know, the ground, the mountains, the wind, but also the built environment. So in my paper, I thought about this triad, place, terrain, and territory, to think about how, in the context of the climate crisis, on the one hand, obviously our perceptions of place are being transformed. You know, we have, you know, heat waves, forest fires that affect people's experiences of place. Those climate events have territorial impacts. I talked about how wildfires in Canada mobilize the power of the state, for instance, through evacuation orders, you know, firefighting crews. But thirdly, it's, you know, climate events express transformations in the materiality of space through, again, hurricanes, wildfires, floods, heat waves, that are all physical part of the terrain of the planet. So in my talk, yeah, I try to put these three concepts in conversation with each other and how, in many ways, the three concepts capture different dimensions of space. And we think we need to take those three dimensions into account. But I think what the climate crisis is showing is that if temperatures continue rising, what will eventually predominate is this power of the planet itself, which I see as terrain, as a figure of the power of the planet Earth or the agency of the Earth, and how this forces us to rethink our everyday life. What I propose is that to look at the power of terrain, this more than human power, kind of exacerbated by rising temperatures, to rethink how we should also reconceptualize places and territories. Obviously, we need to decarbonize, we need to create more, less destructive ways of engaging with the environment, which means also creating new type of places and new territories that challenge the current hegemony of the territories dominated by, you know, fossil capitalism and this kind of denialism that we're still part of, in the sense that, you know, changes are not rapid enough to deal with decarbonization. And I finished talking about how, especially in Latin America, where I'm from and where I do my work, social movements talk a lot about territory, and not as a top-down process, but as something created from the bottom up by social movements. But also this notion of territory embraced by social movements in both a perception of place, a place dear to local communities, that places that need to be defended from environmental destruction, but also implies an attunement to terrain, to the materiality, to the forms and flows of the environment. And that's why I propose to look at these three concepts together to think not only about the climate crisis, but also about this type of political activisms.
The second panel was the refiguration of place, along with Susanne Hauser from Berlin and Thomas Jung from Berlin. And Thomas Jung was talking about beyond place, encountering difference in disastrous times. And Thomas Jung is a PhD researcher at the Institute of European Ethnology and Aerophysics at Humboldt University zu Berlin. And his research deals with the memory and anticipation practices amid climatic disasters and the configuration of past and future temporalities in the Peruvian Andes. And his main research interests include risk and disaster studies, science and technology studies, political ecology, urban anthropology, and the anthropology of time.
Well, for me, the Anthropocene brings a massive challenge to the notion of place, particularly because probably maybe by reflecting what role the place has fulfilled in the history of humankind, right? This idea of stabilizing those constant permanent transformations that we find in the earth. The figure of the place has allowed us to create a sort of stability and kind of a common ground where that we can dwell, that we can inhabit, right? This idea of the place as inhabitability, of dwelling, is a fundamental piece, not only we could say maybe for modernity, but also for humankind in general. And Anthropocene comes to destabilize this figure, right? We are not living in solid grounds anymore. We're not living in a time where we can say that we are inhabiting stable places, right? And so the figure of the place is completely contested in these very tumultuous times. So in my presentation, what I try to present, what I try to offer is an alternative view of the place based on the idea of the tinku, right? The tinku, or tinkui as a verb, is the gathering, the difference, right? It's a word in Quechua that has a long-standing tradition and could be also considered as a noun, like tinku, and which means a place or a thing where different positions, multiple positions come together. So the idea of presenting tinku as a place or thing where difference is precisely what articulates the place itself is the idea that we maybe might to reconsider what we consider as the stable grounds of the place by thinking of novel ways of creating place based on the difference rather than this commonality the notion of the dwelling offer us.
The second day started with the third panel, the refiguration of networks, along with Jennifer Galbraith from Cambridge and Marcela Suarez Estrada from Berkeley, Berlin. And Marcela Suarez Estrada was talking about internet as a territory, power and colonialism in the digital area. And Marcela Suarez Estrada is a visiting fellow at the Center for Latin American Studies at University of California, Berkeley, along being a research associate at the Latin American Institute at Freie Universität Berlin and holds a PhD in political science. Her areas of interest are the terrestrial internet, digital violence, governance of the internet, feminism, and digital culture.
I participated in the panel of networks, and my presentation was about the tension between the connection that the network, namely internet, allows, but at the same time, the disconnection. How all these relate to the Anthropocene. In this participation, I talked about how internet is terrestrial in the sense that it's linked to the Anthropocene. So there I will see this relationship not so much as change, but there is a connection between the Anthropocene and the internet. And it was clear in their presentation that the Anthropocene is as the focus in this human activity that causes this climate change. It was clear that the internet, because of the infrastructures, the cables, and all the materials and minerals that devices need, it was clear that it's a part of, we cannot understand the networks and the Anthropocene as a separate things or as if they have nothing to do. So technologies are part of the climatic regime discussions. And this is because they are also part of the space that we inhabit. So we talk about the territory, we talk about how these infrastructures also cause struggles in different communities. And we also talk about digital colonialism as a way to explain that it's not just about the capitalization of data, but the colonialism is linked to the extractivism of resources. So that is the domination of nature. And that's why these two are connected.
The final panel of the symposium was the refiguration of routes, along with Andrew Baldwin from Durham and Christopher Kelty from LA. And Christopher Kelty was talking about helicopter overpass non-target figuring pathways in Los Angeles. Christopher Kelty is professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. His ethnographic and historical work explores the intersection of science, technology, and social political theory. His research interests center on social theory and technology, the cultural significance of information technology, the relationship of participation, technology, and the public sphere.
Okay, so I guess I was on the panel for the route, but I talked about pathways, which on the surface are routes, I suppose. They have the same kind of spatial figure. But my particular use of the term actually comes from biology, where it refers to a process. So metabolic pathways, for instance, are a common, very common feature of metabolic sciences and biochemistry, where you have a series of chemical reactions, a kind of cycle that goes through a series of steps and then comes to an end. So that's widely used as the term pathway. Also used in the archaeological and biological literature around domestication, where people are talking about domestication pathways in order to differentiate how animals are domesticated differently than we normally imagine, right? That intentional domestication of animals, the idea of artificial selection, has been contested by people who've discovered in doing archaeological work that there are many different ways, pathways, in which animals come to be domesticated. And so in this sense, it's a kind of interlocking process that biologists use to make sense of life and make sense of processual sense of life, something that has a cycle to it, isn't just a one-way direction rather than, you know, something that's simply deterministic. Okay, so the question, I suppose, is how does the Anthropocene change this notion? I think only in the sense that it kind of changes our relationship to the future. Roots are, you know, when we think about roots, they're visible, they're directional, you know, they go one direction or another. The notion of a pathway might be, as a process, might be reversible, right? Chemical reactions are often reversible. And to think about something like domestication as being reversible is interesting. And feralization, for instance, is the opposite of domestication. I think Ignacio invoked Anat Singh and her feral atlas, right? So you see these, what she calls feral proliferations, but in ecology is maybe a version of feralization, right? This reversible process that I think is interesting. And so, yeah, pathway maybe is a way to think about, you know, a spatial figure that is also, to some extent, temporal, right? Has a temporal category, or characteristic, rather.
So, as we can see, a lot of different aspects of the spatial figures and their understandings were discussed. And in general, it seems like spatial figures are dependent on each other in quite specific situational ways, and also conflicts occurring between these figures when relations change and therefore the field and the balance of tensions. But I would propose that we listen to what our two organizers had to say about the 2 days of the conference, about spatial figures, the Anthropocene, and first conclusion they drew straight after the Friday evening performance lecture, which will be left for another Space Oddity episode. In this sense, I will say already goodbye, thank you for joining us, and see you in the next one. Bye-bye.
I think what I really liked about the conference is the kind of atmosphere that we created, which was a very productive atmosphere involving the guests that we have and also the members of the CRC. I mean, we had different formats that we applied in this conference. The panels that followed the 4 different spatial figures that we apply in our research center, the territory, the network, the route, and the place. And then also we had coffee conversations, smaller formats, more informal formats, where we tried to involve the CRC researchers with the guests that we invited in a smaller, more informal context. And I think the formats really worked very well within the conference. But also, I think in terms of content, there is some kind of outcome.
No, but I mean, about the formats, I also think that it was very important to have the panels around figures.
Yeah.
So one panel for each figure and how these figures are refigurated. But if I could look back at what happened, I think that the most interesting for me was like the connections that you could see between the panels. Mm-hmm. So how place, territory, network, and so on, these figures were showing up in the wrong panels, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks for rethinking what these figures are doing. And it's also an invitation to be less strict about like, okay, we're constantly separating the figures and really be more flexible, more variable, more playful, more empirical as well with the multiplicity of things.
That was an interesting output. And I think an example would be the presentation by Chris Kelty, who talked in the routes panel about the niche as a spatial figure, which would further develop the idea of the place. So the place was very present in the route panel, for example. And then another example was the territory that emerged, for example, in the network panel, where we had a conversation about the internet as a form of network.
but that also takes on territorialized forms that can be applied also in more political terms and made into a political figure again. So yeah, this is something I liked as well.
Well, and I also think that the topic, climate change, environmental injustice, ecological challenges and transformations, is a key topic. And I think the conference like kind of made very evident that, well, on the one hand, that we're very well equipped kind of conceptually to address those issues, but at the same time, that we really need to go for that, I think. So I think that is opening up the conference an empirical field, so to speak, that we haven't touched upon so much in the SFB so far. But I think that we could for sure like kind of extend the project towards that sort of area.
So was it a way to show the Collaborative Research Center how to land on Earth? Somehow it was like this.
Somehow it was, yeah.
Yeah, how to land on Earth and how the special figures can land on Earth.
Okay. So
and can get mixed up with other special figures that we have not been thinking about, such as the critical zone, the terrain, for example. Yeah. And they get into conversation with the figures we already have been discussing.
Yeah, one of the guests said something along those lines, because he said that in a way engaging with the Anthropocene is also bringing life into the figures.
Yeah.
And when you start to think about space, not only as an arrangement of things, but also as a something about life, about living processes, then something like that happens. And I think this idea of bringing life into the figures has this meaning, but it has also the meaning that Martina was suggesting, which is another idea, which is like, okay, these figures might have careers, they might have lives, and they might be transitioning from a modernistic kind of shape towards something else. And for me, this was really like the most important insight, because we framed the event in those terms. So we said at the beginning, there is a modernist imprint. We are looking for what happens to them. Yeah. And that's why it was special figures in the Anthropocene and not off the Anthropocene. It was in the Anthropocene. Yeah. So we need to see. And then Martina was kind of providing an answer to that, which was, I thought, very important.
I have really no idea where this will take us, actually. But I think it's very thought-provoking, definitely, to think about how the figures can develop. But also Martina connected it with the idea of there is hope somehow in the spatial figures that they can develop in something better, which I find very sympathetic. But I'm not sure if this works.
Okay.
Yeah. That's an open question probably to take home.
I also think that, well, Philip was also pointing to something similar, not just in saying, okay, we need positive figures, but also in saying, paying attention to the entanglements. And I guess all of the conferences were paying attention to these entanglements that are bringing life into these spatial figures, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is also something that we could kind of theorize or conceptualize more strongly. So I think Philip had a point in pointing to this, how to re-entangle things, how to rejoin what has been disjoint.